Moncrief on News Talk.
Time to have a look around the world and what's happening in the parts of our globe we don't normally talk about that often. Jonathan DeBurka-Butler is here with us once again. Afternoon,
Sean,
Jonathan.
How are you getting on?
Zambia we're going to go to first. And a former First Lady there is in a bit of trouble.
She's in a spot of bother, all right. This is the wife of Edgar Lungu. Her name is Esther. She's 66 years of age. Edgar Lungu was the president from 2015 until 2021, okay? And he narrowly won, an election in 2016 and then was quite convincingly beaten in 2021 by Hakainde Hichilema, 59% to 38%. And he then retired from politics, or at least we thought he had. Mm. And the reason I'm mentioning him so much is because he decided to come back into politics last October. And around about that time, it appears that a few authorities took an interest in what had happened and what his family had been doing around about the time that he was in power, right?
Okay.
So this is why I wanted to mention that, you know, he sort of had retired. He'd been given a retirement package. When he said he was going to re-enter politics, that package was withdrawn. And then these investigations.
Right, and then
launched.
A renewed interest in his business dealings.
Exactly,
yes.
Exactly. Yeah. So of course, this goes along the lines of him saying that all of this is politically motivated. Anyway, his wife, 66-year-old Esther, as I said, and his daughter, Chieso, were arrested on Thursday. And this is over possession of properties that the authorities suspect they got from the proceeds of crime. Now, it's very interesting that it's the state anti-drug agency that's actually involved here. Now, I don't know if that is significant. For me, it's significant. It's not just the ordinary police that are involved here. And maybe there's some sort of a suggestion that the money that was acquired to buy these properties came from drug dealing of some way, shape, or form.
Right.
Anyway, the properties in question are described as 15 white double story flats. Now, I've actually seen a picture of them. They are not flats. They are very big houses. So I don't know why they're describing it as that. And it's on a fair old chunk of land in what is a wealthy part of the capital, Lusaka, worth about $1.5 million, presumably. They estimate. So that's those 15 properties. The wife is accused of taking, the daughter is accused of taking three properties, or of owning three properties that she shouldn't own. And so they were both interviewed on Thursday. They were let out on a bond. We don't yet know when there will be a trial or if there will be a trial. But as you can imagine, it's causing a bit of a stir in Zambia. It's main news there over the weekend.
I know. So is the allegation that they bought these properties because they're ill-gotten gains, but they haven't specified what they've been up to be able to buy these
exactly.
houses?
Exactly. They failed, to quote the agency, they failed to give a reasonable explanation as to how they came across these properties.
Right, okay.
They haven't been accounted for as such. There's another daughter who was supposed to have been arrested last Thursday along with them as well, but she's out of the country. And we suspect that when she comes back, if indeed she does come back, that she'll have to answer charges as well.
Yeah, crikey. Have they ever been arrested or charged or accused of anything before?
Yeah, the wife was actually arrested last year, towards the end of last year, in relation to theft of motor vehicles and title deeds. I don't know how far those charges have gone yet, but they're facing a bit of an uphill battle. Of course, Edgar Lungu, the former president, and the husband has obviously said that they're going to fight these accusations in the courts and, you know, clear their name.
Yeah, all that stuff. We shall see. Right, Nigeria, we're going to go to next. And there's the government has changed. Is it the national anthem they've changed?
Mm, yeah. It's basically reverted to what some are describing as it's the old new national anthem, right? So when Nigeria became independent in 1960, they gained independence from Britain. They went with a national anthem called "Nigeria, We Hail Thee." It was actually written by a British expatriate who was white, a woman by the name of Lillian Jean Williams, and she won a competition and won £1,000 while winning that as well, okay. Right? And it was always a little bit controversial because, you know, it was written by a white woman, and there is some that believed it was actually taken from an old British hymn as well, a religious hymn, that the music itself might not be original. So anyway, for the guts of 18 years, that was the national anthem, and then it was changed under the military regime. So there was a military regime there, as you know, from 66 to 99, and it was replaced in 1978 by Arise, O Compatriots. Now, you might say to yourself, okay, so what, they've changed the national anthem. It's caused a bit of controversy in the country simply because the new president, Bola Tinubu, is under a little bit of pressure at the moment. The economy is going very badly. And, you know, there's a lot of security concerns, yes, there with kidnappings and ethnic violence and also religious violence that's been going on in the country. So a lot of people are criticising him, basically saying that this is a mere deflection. You know, why are you going ahead putting all of this through Parliament on some sort of pretense of national unity when the country is in a fair bit of disarray. Inflation is through the roof and so on. They're also a little bit annoyed that it was pushed through so quickly. The legislation was passed in a week. Normally it wouldn't take that long. And there's a little bit of annoyance that the public themselves weren't consulted on this. So, you know, changing a national anthem is not that easy. We might have to do something like that ourselves in years to come. I don't know what people's views on that are.
Yeah.
But do text in, I suppose.
There'll be lots of views on that.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be. Yeah. So they've changed it now anyway. And, you know, supporters of it are basically saying, look, it was a military thing that was there before and it was wrong to have it. So better to go back to the old one.
Yeah. Yeah. OK. Right. Now, this is an interesting story. We're going to go to Spain now. And Catalan separatists have been given amnesty. Why have they been given amnesty?
Okay, so you remember there was the secession bid in 2017 that caused really alarm bells right across Europe, because you remember they had a referendum there. Now, a lot of people, you know, didn't show up to it. And I think the police were very heavy-handed in how they dealt with the people who were sort of pro-independence. And it was a bit of a shock. Some of the footage was fairly shocking. But anyway, after that, an awful lot of people who were involved in the secession bid, and this goes all the way up to the leader of the current Junts party, Carles Puigdemont, who's in Belgium. It goes all the way up to him and other politicians, all the way down to people who were, you know, facilitating the vote, you know, fellas standing behind tables drinking coffee and saying, yeah, come on in and vote. And so there was over 300 people who had charges and had a criminal record because of this. And this was causing, obviously, problems in Catalonia in terms of, you know, how do we move forward if we've got this thing happening, if people have this thing hanging over them, right? So the Prime Minister, who's been there since 2018, Pedro Sanchez, he'd be left-wing, he decided that he'd push a bill through which will give these Catalan separatists an amnesty. So it will bring them back into the fold, so to speak. And he's saying that in politics, as in life, forgiveness is more powerful than rancor. So he says we need this in order to move on.
Okay. And the Catalan separatist movement itself, how is there any word on how they've received this?
Yeah, well, it's been received fairly well. I mean, I know the original bill, there was a vote on it in the lower chamber of Parliament that was successful. That was back in March, but then the Senate stopped it. I think their Senate is very similar to ours in that they kind of don't do much.
They can block us,
They can block it, but they can only push it back down to the lower house, and it was pushed through again. But it only got through by 5 votes in the Parliament, 177 to 172. I know that during the drafting of the bill that Carles Puigdemont himself thought that there were certain aspects of it that didn't go far enough, that there, you know, there was still lingering doubts about how far it would go for some people and would it cover everyone.
This isn't a blanket amnesty then?
Well, it's going to be taken on a case by case basis in various different courts. So I don't know yet if it's a it really is a blanket amnesty, to be honest with you. It's also more than likely going to be challenged in the courts, right?
Okay.
There's some people who are saying from a constitutional point of view, well, why are these Spanish people getting better treatment than other Spanish people?
Yeah.
That's a fair enough point.
Yeah.
Everyone's equal in the eyes of the law, as they say, et cetera, et cetera. So it passed. but whether it'll go through in the end remains to be seen.
Yeah, because at the time it seemed like the Spanish government was taking quite a hard line on all this.
Well, it was a different government, I think.
Yeah, it was a different government, but it sounds from what you're saying that there's still a sizable rump of people within the political establishment who don't want to see any sorts of forgiveness over this at all.
Huge amounts, and you'd wonder if there was an election held tomorrow. I know they've only had one recently. But if there was an election held tomorrow, how it would go in Spain? There's areas of Spain which would not be happy about this at all.
Yeah, right. South Korea. We're going to go to next, where the to coin a phrase, the poo is actually hitting the fan. But it's North Korean poo, I understand.
North Korean poo. It took me a while to establish whether it was human or animal. Apparently, it's animal.
Okay.
Feces. So I thank God for small mercies, I suppose. So this is South Korea has warned residents living near the border with North Korea to be on the lookout for what I'm going to coin as poo loons.
Right.
These are basically being sent over from North Korea into the south. They're big white balloons and tethered to them is other bags with either excrement or rubbish.
Okay.
And they're basically dropping into the onto the South Korean side. But some of them have gone quite far into the country and have been found in provinces that they have no right to be found in, right? So they've travelled quite a distance. Now, when I first saw this story, at the end of last week, 150 poo loons had been detected. Either they had landed or they were in the sky, right? And they were being reported on. Since then, it seems that the number has gone up to 600. And it's causing a bit of a diplomatic spat, as you can imagine. I mean, the two of them don't really get on particularly well. They're going through a bit of a hard time at the moment. They have been urged to desist from this particular action by the South Koreans. The North Koreans are basically saying they're doing this because there is rubbish being sent over from South Korea into North Korea. And what they mean by that is that there are balloons going from South Korea into North Korea, but they generally have propaganda on them. So basically leaflets. And this is an old tactic that's been going on for a very long time, right? There's actually organizations that routinely do this. They release balloons into the north. They attach USB keys with K-pop and music and that kind of thing onto it. Money, leaflets basically telling the people of North Korea to get away and rise up and that kind of thing. So the North Koreans have had enough and they decided to send excrement over.
Yes. Yeah, sometimes kind of Cold Wars can be a bit silly that way. But I suppose it's better than testing ballistic missiles.
Yeah, absolutely.
One would have thought. So there's no there's no sign of any of that stopping.
Well, really. I'm not sure. It's actually got quite serious now because there was a military deal that was in place between a sort of we promise not to shoot you if you don't shoot us kind of deal in place. And the South Koreans are now saying, OK, well, we're going to put a freeze on that. And they've started training along the border in areas that they probably shouldn't be training in, which might lead to some sort of a provocation. But it would be outrageous if there was a war over poo. But
Joe says 90 named poo balloons go by. Indeed. Finally, the orange juice industry is in a bit of trouble. What's happening?
Yeah, it's a strange story, this one. I had to take a bit of a dig into this. It's basically down to poor harvests that are happening in Brazil. So Brazil is responsible for 70% of the world's orange juice, right?
Wow.
There you are.
Okay.
And at the moment, they're in difficulty because there is a thing that the trees are suffering from called citrus greening, right? It's an incurable disease, and it comes from extreme heat stress and drought and all that kind of thing. And a little bug gets into it. It basically turns the fruit bitter and then it kills the tree, right? So the production is down 24% on last year.
My word.
Now, that's a huge amount. And when you consider that it's down on figures that were down the year before and the year before that, that is raising the price of orange concentrate up to never seen before levels, right? So you're talking $4.95 a pound, right, at the moment. Now, you're looking at me going, so what? If I give you a comparison, the 6th of May 2021, it was $1.21 for a pound.
Crikey.
So it's gone up four times. Prices on the shelves in the United States have gone up by 56%, apparently. And so these producers are now saying, well, we're going to have to come up with an alternative. We're going to have to get either Satsumas or whatever it might be, and we're going to have to mix it in with this orange juice. The only problem is they can't because of the food laws, right? There has to be certain levels of juice and it has to be orange and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So they want to get it changed. But that could take a while. And as it stands, they are in a bit of a crisis.
Yeah. So presumably the price of orange juice everywhere
I would assume
be going
so.
Up as a
yeah. It's a bit like having been spoken about recently about chocolate and coffee and those kind of things that's going up everywhere. I assume they will. We will see prices going up right across the globe. Certainly, as I said, in the States, up 56% on what they were last year.
Okay. So, folks, sorry to end there with bad news. What should we look out for over the next week or so?
Yeah, it's all happening on Thursday. The 80th anniversary of D-Day is on Thursday, which is quite something. And there'll be lots of commemorations around that. Good few documentaries coming up on TV about that as well. Some fascinating stuff, so keep an eye out for that. Thursday the 6th, also European Parliament elections begin across Europe and they'll go on until Sunday, of course. On the same day, the ECB interest rate decision is going to be released. So they're forecasting a rate cut there.
Okay.
On that day. And then there's also parliamentary elections in Belgium. So a lot happening on Thursday.
Yeah, a lot happening on Thursday. Jonathan, thanks a million.
Cheers,
as ever. Jonathan de Burka Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.